So, Brian, how can my real estate photography business grow and stay on the cutting edge?
You need to start using HDPhotoHub.com. All you do is upload your photos and your clients get a property website, social media flyers, and videos all automatically.
That sounds pretty good. So how do I get started?
Well, it's pretty easy, Rich. All you do is register at HDPhotoHub.com. If you use the referral code SHOOTINGSPACES, you get your first property marketing kit absolutely free.
Free?
I did say free.
Okay.
HD Photo Hub is where great photos become a powerful marketing kit. Again, that's HDPhotoHub.com.
Welcome to Shooting Spaces, a real estate photography podcast. Discussions on gear, technique, industry news, and interviews with the best in the business. Now, here are your hosts, Rich Baum and Brian Berkowitz.
Welcome to Shooting Spaces, a real estate photography podcast. This is Rich Baum in Sacramento, California.
And Brian Berkowitz from New York.
And we want to welcome you to this week's episode of Shooting Spaces. So what's going on, Brian? How are you?
I'm good. It's picked up a little bit, which is great. It's very exciting. My schedule is starting to fill up and good things are coming. Hopefully, I don't want to say we're on the other side of winter, but you know, we're almost approaching March. You know, we're in this holiday weekend now. So we're, you know, almost approaching March, and soon enough, we'll start kicking off our busy seasons again.
Well, when you say winter, I just took a hooky day today and went skiing at in Lake Tahoe. And God, we got 88 inches in the last 7 days. So wow. I'll take that. It was need a waist deep powder, and I'm very thrilled. I'm a little tired, but very thrilled, but ready to do our podcast. What we got today?
We have an Ask the Guys question. We have actually a really good question. I'm really excited about this one.
Love Ask the Guys. And yes. What, just tell people out there, Brian, what is Ask the Guys?
If you have a question about real estate photography, you can ask the guys. Pretty straightforward. But yeah, go to our website, submit a question through our Ask the Guys portal. And that's not the only way you can submit a question, by the way. We have some people who have recorded questions using their voice memo on their phone and just emailing it to us. Or I had one guy who sent me an email and said, how can I get you this question on my phone? And I had him text it to me. So any way you have of getting us a question or recording, we will gladly accept it. And, you know, we have a lot in the queue now, so we've got a bunch. So we're excited to get a lot of this out to you guys.
And I appreciate the people that take the time to do it, because it's a great feature and it's informative, and I love doing it. So I'm really happy to answer questions. As everybody knows, I got a lot of stuff to say. So
sure. So but despite the amount of questions we have, we can always use more. I'd rather have more to get to than, you know, begging people for some questions. So send them in.
And if you post once, you can always ask us again, as many as you want.
So yeah, we've had a few repeats, and we have, I think, one or two repeats in the queue also. So
awesome.
All right.
Okay. What's the question today?
Here we go.
Hey, Rich and Brian. My name is John Langevin, and I'm from the Memphis, Tennessee area. My business website is johnlangevin.com. I have an Ask the Guys question that I'm hoping that you could help me out with. I'm fairly new to the real estate photography business, and my number one goal for 2019 is to transition my business from something that is a little bit more than a hobby to a true business pursuit. The main thing that I feel that is holding me back is my equipment. I've invested in a Canon 5D Mark IV, but everything else I have seems to be slowing me down. Obviously, you two love talking equipment, and you do often, but I haven't heard you sit down and fully discuss the progression of equipment a professional photographer needs as his or her business grows. With all the experience you've had with all different levels of equipment, I was hoping that you could summarize your experience and recommend a list of equipment for basic, intermediate, and advanced shooters. I'm shooting HDR now, but for 2019, I'm looking to learn and apply the techniques that you teach on your show, so please make any suggestions suitable for shooters that are looking to graduate past HDR. To give you an example, I currently have a $100 Amazon tripod that I absolutely despise, but I cannot justify to my finance committee spending $1,000 to $2,000 on just a tripod and head. But I can justify spending maybe $200 to $300 on a tripod now, $600 to $800 on an upgrade in a year or two, and then eventually more than that when my business can support that kind of an expense. I would also like to know what you recommend for tethering to an iPad, different levels of lighting equipment, and any other equipment or items that you would recommend. I truly appreciate the commitment you guys have to the podcast and the content that you share. As an engineer turned photographer, there is definitely a large learning curve when it comes to knowledge and equipment, and you guys do a great job at delivering both. Thanks again for everything.
Wow, John, that was a great question, a long question, but a great question. And I definitely think it's good to, first of all, understand that, equipment is only a quarter of the battle. And obviously, it's knowledge and the person behind the cameras, everyone says so often, as far as what your results look like. And you're shooting with a 5D Mark IV, which is the same camera I'm shooting with. So I definitely think you're ahead of the game as far as gear is concerned. So don't let that ever discourage you. But yeah, there are definitely different equipment you want to get, I guess, from beginner to intermediate advanced as you start progressing and you hone your craft. And I think, you know, that your technique becomes second nature, that's when you can start getting better equipment that will make your technique easier, such as, you know, tilt shift lenses, etc., geared heads. But Rich, I know you're, you help beginners all the time. That's what you do. That's what your workshop is geared towards. That's what your YouTube channel is geared towards. So what are your thoughts on, I guess, the necessary equipment to get started in this versus the luxury, I guess you can call it the luxury items that, you know, are good to have, but not necessary.
Yeah, I certainly have plenty to say about equipment. And I absolutely, you got a great camera. I don't think there's any reason that you need to upgrade that. And I think you realize that. But there are a lot of other things. And you said you're going from HDR to lighting. And you got quite a few things ahead of you, but let's just get started with, because we don't need to talk about your camera. And I will say, for beginners, I actually did a video on what I think is the best camera for the money, and it's by no means am I sponsored by Sony. I just happen to shoot them now, but I just did a video about the Sony A6000, which I bought at open box for about $340, I think. And I've been shooting that same A6000 for about 4 years, 3 years now. It's probably got a million shots on it. But it works really, really well. And I use it with a Samyang 12mm lens, which is a manually focusing lens. But when you set it to just shy of infinity, I never have to focus that lens. And it goes on the A6000, which is a crop sensor camera. And, you know, it's really all you need for this business. And I'm only saying this because you've got more than enough camera. But for the people out there that are looking to get into it as a beginner, it's not really important to have a camera with incredible ISO performance. It doesn't have to have incredible focusing performance. It just has to be something that you feel comfortable about. And that A6000 works great for me. But I used to shoot Nikon. I had a D750, and it was a more than adequate camera. And you used a Canon, Brian. So I think that, you know, it's really whatever works for you. I now also shoot an A7 III, which is a full frame camera. But when people ask, you get the comments in the groups about, do I need a full frame camera? And is it amateurish to shoot crop? Absolutely not. And we can even go ask our buddy Wayne Capilli. He's the one that got me shooting an A6000. And you absolutely do not have to have a full frame camera. You can have a lower end camera. I just think something that works for you, that's great. So let's just move on from there. Personally, I like manual focusing lenses. They just seem to work better for me, and autofocus lenses. And I don't really tend to shoot zoom lenses, although I have many zoom lenses. So, you know, you can have a zoom lens, anything that's in the nature of, I think 16-35 is the most all around focal length you can get for real estate photography. I think that
that's the lens that I started with when I started. I have the Canon 16-35 2.8, which is a very expensive lens, but you know based on the way we shoot, you can get the F4 version and save a significant amount of money.
Absolutely.
If you're shooting Canon. So yeah, definitely get, as you said, Rich, the 16-35 is definitely a great starter lens to go, and it's going to probably give you any focal length you need from wide to 35, which you can even get in close and do some really cool, more designer-esque compositions, or, you know, wider details, if you want to call it that, at 35 millimeters.
Yeah. And let's go touch base with your tripod. I mean, Brian, what do you think about, he's got a $100 tripod, which I can only imagine what it is.
God knows, well, he despises it.
It's Amazon, so it's got to be good. well, what do you think? I mean, you know, save some money, but I really think, you know, I know personally, a camera platform, a tripod, is as important, if not more important, than almost anything that I have, because I want something sturdy. I want something that is going to last me. I want something that is precision. So I use a really funky tripod, but it's my choice. And actually, probably 20, 30, 40 people out there have gotten the same tripod, because it's, I just love it so much, and people take a risk on what I like. And it's the Manfrotto 3046, which is a tripod I used to, my first one I bought probably in 1982 or 1984 for surf photography, and you can still get them on eBay. That's the only place you can get them. But I mean, I find them for $79 to $100, and it's just an incredible tripod. But you don't have to get that, and I just think you got to get something though that is not super light. I don't think that really benefits us, because we are, the way we're shooting, we're taking different images, and we've got to put them together in Photoshop. Mm-hmm. So can't have a lot of movement. And I just think that you can get a nice carbon tripod, but I think you can even get just a nice Manfrotto aluminum tripod. And you know, a lot of people say they may break, but the one thing I want to say to you is, I think don't look at upgrading your tripod. Spend the money one time. It's a rule in photography. Spend the money on a tripod once, or you will spend it three or four times, and eventually spend more, five times more money than you're going to spend to get a good one at the beginning. So I think between $150 and, oh gosh, $1,000, you know, that's me though. But what tripod do you recommend, Brian?
Yeah, so when I started, I got the Manfrotto aluminum tripod, the 055, and I think it's only $200, or let me see. It's $195. So I had that. I mean, I still have it now, but I had that for the first 5 years I was shooting, and it's pretty sturdy. It's pretty stable. It was a little heavy because it was aluminum, but that thing is solid. And I don't know the Amazon tripod you're specifically using, John, but I would gather, you know, $100 for an Amazon tripod versus $195 for Manfrotto, you'd be much better off with the Manfrotto tripod. I get it's double, but I think it's more than double better than the Amazon tripod. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, Sam Chen uses a Benro, and it's about $350 or $400.
Well, I just got that.
Oh, yeah,
I got
that. What do you think?
I got that also about 3 months ago. It's a carbon fiber, the Benro Mac 3, whatever it's called, tripod. And I love it. Look, I came from using an aluminum tripod. So for me to go to the carbon fiber, even that, I guess, 1 and 1.5 pound savings was huge. And the reason I actually bit the bullet eventually was, I was always looking at just upgrading to a carbon fiber, but I did a shoot. I did a shoot in the city. I think it was the shoot I did a month ago with Jordan Powers, which I've spoken about. We were going all over Manhattan, and I had my aluminum tripod on my shoulder for probably I don't know, hours at a time, you know, taking the subway and the trains and this and that. And the next day, my shoulder was physically sore from holding that aluminum tripod bag over my shoulder. And I know it's only a pound and a half, but I said, you know what, I need to go lighter. And I was thinking about it anyway for a while. And I spoke to Sam, I got his thoughts on it. And I, you know, I bought it. And it's, I think it was $380. And I love it.
And that's, really that's definitely not more than I think anybody should spend on a tripod. I think bite the bullet, save a little bit of money, and then go get yourself a $350 carbon tripod, because it's going to last you a long time. You know, every cameras and lenses are going to be outdated. You know, they're going to wear out eventually. A good tripod could last you a long time. So.
Yeah, there's a review that Sam sent me when I was asking him about it, where they reviewed that Benroe tripod versus a bunch of others, really right stuff, right, and good right. tripods. And the Benroe, which was almost half the price of all the other tripods, actually rated better on that F-Stopper's review. So
it's a great review, by the way, too. Really, really.
Yeah, helpful. so definitely go check out that review on F-Stopper's on that Benroe tripod. It's definitely worth a watch. And, you know, segueing into, I guess, heads, I think that's even more important than the tripod itself. So, you know, I think if you're going to spend money, and, you know, I know, John, you were talking about $1,000 to $2,000 on a tripod, which I would not suggest, especially at this point in your career, or maybe even ever, definitely spend that money on the head rather than the tripod.
But don't put a Manfrotto 405 geared head on a $100 Amazon tripod. So you got to kind of find a middle ground. But I think I'd love to touch upon, though, the importance, and I got to say one thing, the importance of a geared head. And if you don't know what a geared head is, you got to look it up. And it is just a precision head where you can adjust your height, your pan, your tilt, everything in minute increments. And it's just, once you start shooting with a geared head, and I don't know anybody that has shot with a geared head and has gone back to a ball head, a pistol grip, a, you know, whatever. Get yourself a geared head. And they start at about $165. Manfrotto makes one. It's actually not terrible. And then they make the Junior 410, which actually has a lot of problems down the road. I've actually had problems with mine. Loosening up and getting a little bit of slop in there, but that's about $275. Mm-hmm. And
let's see if it's even cheaper. I'm looking right here. It's
$230. Yeah, that's because it's not very good. No,
but yeah, look, you know what? The truth is, I started the first 4 years of doing this with that aluminum Manfrotto 055 tripod and the 410 Junior, which altogether for the combo is about $400-$450. And I got away with that for about three and change years. So you're not talking about a big investment, and yeah, there are problems with the Manfrotto 410, but for the price when you're starting, I think the pros outweigh those cons.
Yeah, and the bottom line is, it's just whatever you do, at least really seriously think about a geared head. It doesn't matter what geared head, but get a geared head, because it is all the difference in the world. It will save you time in the long run. It will last. It is just going to make your life better. That's the thing. I personally now use an Arca Swiss D4 head, and you know, it's a lot more expensive. It's with the clamp and everything, it's close to $1,000, which seems like crazy cuckoo when I started out. But I'll be honest with you, the whole thing is, it's just so nice to have. It's like I can drive a Maserati, I can afford a Maserati, and that's the same thing. The Arca Swiss D4 to me is like a Maserati, but I couldn't afford a real Maserati, but I can't afford a D4. And if I'm not incorrect, didn't you get an Arca Swiss D4?
I have an Arca Swiss, not a D4. I have the P0 hybrid.
Oh, right.
Yeah, which is not, you know, not much cheaper than yours. I think it's about $920. Yeah. But, you know, look, between my, you know, Benroe legs and my, you know, Arca Swiss head, it's like you said, it's like, compare that with my, you know, Manfrotto 410 and Manfrotto aluminum tripod. It's
yeah,
you know, going from, you know, I don't know, a little crappy car to a Maserati. Yeah,
but exactly. We're not in any way, shape, or form saying you got to go out and get that head. I just think to get started at the beginning of the heads and go and get it and then get a good tripod. So I think we've covered that. And
well, I think those are the differences, because he was asking about going from beginner to intermediate to advanced.
Oh, absolutely. So absolutely.
Those are the type of differences when, you know, you hone on your technique and then you get those small upgrades that just make your life... It might not necessarily change what you're producing, correct, but it will just make your life easier, yes, and a little more convenient. So those are the type of things.
A geared head, though, will change everything. Yes. And a better geared head will mainly just make it better. So, yes, you're exactly correct. Okay. So let's now talk about, what do we talk about? Lights now? Should we talk about lights?
He was asking about lights and also about tethering.
Okay. So. Well, let's, okay, real briefly, we can talk about tethering. Okay. If you listen to me, you know, I shoot tethered 100% of the time indoors. I did a little bit of shooting last week without being tethered, but I don't know why I did it, but I am tethered and I am personally using Sony cameras now. So I am using the Sony camera with the built-in Wi-Fi, and actually the A6000, a great thing about that is the Wi-Fi works really well, the internal Wi-Fi, which then you can use the Play Memories app, and that works really well for me, but you can use other apps too. But you know, whatever you do, getting tethered is so important. It is really, really a key part of my whole photography, because I am looking at an iPad, and I have an iPad mini second generation. And by the way, the key to the iPad is you got to have whatever you get, you got to have a case with a strap on it. That's the only way it works. You can't just set it down and move it and attach it to your tripod. You just have a little strap, and you can find some stuff on my, all my YouTube channels videos. I have got my little iPad on my side, but the bottom line is the things that tethering can do is, okay, it can remotely adjust and remotely trigger your camera, which is very good and very important. But the main things to me are, one is you can see what you're doing bigger on an iPad, and you're going to find that you're going to maybe take longer at the beginning on site, but you're going to, because you're going to start seeing some mistakes you make or some issues, but you're going to save money on the other end, because you're going to be able to see your mistakes, fix your mistakes on site, so when you get home, you're not surprised. Now, the other thing too is with an iPad, I do a little bit, a fair amount of design photography, and that way I can go out into where the camera is looking and I can move furniture, move props, move things, and I can also give my iPad to the designer, and they can look at the screen, and they can move things to camera, and they don't have to go back and look at the camera. They can see what the camera's seeing because they have your iPad there. And I have most of my designers say I will never work with anybody again that's not tethered, just because it's so great. And if you were tethered to a MacBook Pro or a laptop, it's not the same thing. You got to be able to walk around with it, because you can also put a light in a room in the back and you can trigger it by the light in that other room. You can then, without having to go back to your camera, you can then see the results, trigger the light, see the results, and if you don't like where your light is or you want to change the power or whatever, you can then just move your light, trigger it again, see the results, and you don't have to run back and forth and back and forth to your camera. So that's really, really a super important part. And it also, you can do all of your camera adjustments remotely. You can also, if you're shooting in a bathroom, you can leave the camera in the bathroom, close the door, and you can do the whole shot from outside the bathroom, and you can see everything you're doing. So those are just some of the examples. What do you do?
Yeah, get the cameras into corners where you otherwise wouldn't be able to get stuff like that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I also shoot tethered most of the time. I'm not going to say 100% of the time.
Are you Cam Ranger? What do you use?
Yeah, I'm Cam Ranger.
And I'd be Cam Ranger too if Cam Ranger worked for Sony, which hopefully from Dave, we had an interview with Dave, the CEO of Cam Ranger, and hopefully their new Cam Ranger 2 is coming out and we'll have Sony support.
Yep, he says it's coming.
Can't wait.
Yeah, but yeah, I use an iPad also. Most of my real estate stuff, I've recently started using a MacBook Pro on my designer and architectural stuff, which I know you just said you don't like doing. But I use it on my designer stuff because of the bigger screen. I have a 15-inch screen versus my iPad, which is actually an iPad mini when I shoot. I use an iPad mini because it's easier and I can hold the whole thing in one hand. But you know, when I'm shooting designer or architectural stuff, it's different than real estate where I'm trying to get in and out of the house in an hour and a half. Usually I'm booked for half day or full day and I'm doing anywhere from 3 to maybe 8 shots. So I'm not in a rush. It's very laid back. I don't try to run back and forth. I don't mind, you know, setting something up, taking a picture, going back, moving something, going back and forth. Because, you know, I like to have that slow down mentality and really perfect what I'm doing instead of just trying to get in and out because, you know, you're only making whatever it is, $150, $200. So you have to try to maximize your time on site. So, yeah, but I'm also shooting tethered, whether it's designer mm-hmm. or real estate, you know, almost all the
time. So the concept's the same. There's different things you can use. You know, there are absolutely advantages to using a laptop. You can also do some adjusting of your, you know, you can basically edit a photo right there for your designer if they want to see something.
Yeah, that happens occasionally also, which you can do with the CamRanger. It allows you to save your images in the CamRanger right to your like desktop, and then I can pop it open. So if I'm doing something and, you know, a designer asks me, oh, you know, can you fix this in post? Or how will this look in post? I can just, you know, pop that image quickly open in Photoshop while I'm still tethered, mm-hmm. Saved from CamRanger, write it to my desktop, pop it open and just, you know, do a quick rough edit, you know, in a minute or two just to show them the possibilities. Yeah. So, yeah, there are definitely advantages to both.
And once you shoot tethered, it's very hard not to shoot tethered. It's just such an integral part of my shooting. And I don't care if it takes me longer. I wouldn't shoot without it. So.
Yeah, I mean, when I shoot without it, which does happen occasionally for whatever reasons, my work doesn't look as good, you know, straight up, just because I guess it's a smaller screen, you're using the back of the LCD, it doesn't look as good. And
or you get home and you just, oh my gosh, I didn't see that. And it's just
correct.
And also something I think is really important to shoot, especially if you're using lighting and you're doing compositing, I think it's really important to have a live view effect, or in Sony, it's called exposure preview. And you can mm-hmm. do the same thing by looking on the back of a Canon 5D Mark IV and use live view, but it doesn't work the same. And it doesn't really, live view on DSLRs just isn't the same. So the tethering really allows me to see the real time adjustments of exposure, you know?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, if I am in a case or for whatever reason, I cannot shoot tethered, whether I forgot my CamRanger or the batteries, but whatever the case is, I do use live view on the back of the camera, but you're right. It's not as good. And it's also, you're looking in the back of a 2 or 3 inch, you know, little screen versus an iPad. Okay.
So. Well, let's get off of tethering because the bottom line is we both agree, Brian and I both agree that tethering is the way to go. So definitely do tethering. So yeah, great. Sure. And let's do lighting. What do you you got going on with lighting? I think we're kind of similar in lighting, right?
Yeah, we're kind of similar, but I think both what we both have is, I guess, more intermediate to advanced because we both have, you know, decent lighting gears. I know I have a bunch of 80-200s and the Explorer 600s, mm-hmm. but I don't think anybody that's starting off has to jump into those more expensive and spend, you know, $1,500 or $2,000 on lights. The 80-200 is significantly cheaper, and that's definitely a way to go to start off with an 80-200 Absolutely. And a trigger. But I mean, the truth of the matter is, you know, if you're on a very, very tight budget, you can go and get, you know, Young Nuos or one of those lights for really cheap. And I know they have their issues, but, you know, they're under $100, I think.
But here's the thing. Okay. Going as the progression, it's so funny. I have photos that were, when I started, I had whatever I had. I was actually HDR when I started. So I'm like you. That's my progression. Then I went into lights and they didn't have the Godox. Well, they had Neewer, which is Godox. But mm-hmm. then I went to the Young Nuo. But the problem with Young Nuo was they only made the speed lights. And once you start getting used to using something more powerful, like a 200 watt second, a 360 watt second, or a 600 watt second, I'm not saying you got to get those, but you really start realizing how much it's worth to get a little more power. But the bottom line was the young Nuos, they may be cheap. Well, they're not cheaper than Godox speed lights, but they will not last as long. And I've had a couple of Flashpoint, which is the same as Godox. I've had a few die, but in general, I'm very happy with them. And I used to say the 360 is my favorite light. Well, I got to tell you, I think I'm using my 200 more because it's just compact and it is built in. It's lighter. And I recommend if you're going to get lighting to start, I would get one light stand, which I have actually. Everybody, if you want to know what I'm using, you can find it on, there's a website called kit.com, K-I-T.com, and you put on Rich Baum Photography behind Kit, and kit.com/Rich Baum Photography, and you can see everything that, almost everything that I use, and you can see what the lights I'm using are, but what I'd suggest is to start with one light on a light stand, and you can get the AD200. I really recommend put out the bucks to get the one 200 watt seconds because you're gonna use it a lot, and then get a single speed light, a Flashpoint speed light, and you can actually just strap, I zip tie a flash pouch onto my tripod and I stick a speed light in there. So I always have it by my side. And those two lights are going to it's going to be roughly $400. And so we're going over your budget, but it really, really is well worth it. So I use that. The 200 is a great versatile light. I've got videos on my YouTube channel for the 200 and all the other lights. But get those two lights and then go get yourself a Flashpoint or a Godox. By the way, Godox is the parent company, and they're rebranded in Flashpoint, in Neewer, in Cheetah. So they're all the exact same thing, and they all talk to each other. And I get a lot of questions about why is my Godox trigger not working with my young Nuo lights? Well, they're not on the same frequencies and they don't talk to each other. So you've just got to make sure that you have things that are compatible. And when you get started in this, it's a little complicated and can be a little bit daunting or intimidating, but don't let that stop you. Figure it out and it will work. So I just think you should start with a 200 and a speed light, and you will be able to do that and do my technique of let the ambient do the heavy lifting, which really, really will save you a lot of money on lighting. So you can do any location. In my opinion, you could do any location doing that technique, let the ambient do the heavy lifting, and a 200 and a speed light, and you're set to go. So that's just my opinion and what works for me.
Sure, you know, and I agree. I have two AD200s, among other things, and I use them all the time. And I think, you know, when you go from there, having one, like you said, is definitely enough for a beginner. And then as you start progressing to intermediate, and then more advanced, you can start, you know, building up your lighting arsenal. I have, you know, two of those Explorer 600s, those flash points. And, you know, when I have bigger spaces and most of my designer shoots, I use those because I go a little more heavy with the flash. And I also have two Nikon speed lights. I forgot where I found this. Maybe even one of Mike Kelly's original videos. I don't remember where I saw this. This might be it. But I have two Nikon 80DX speed lights, which I bought online used for like $35 or $40 each. And the reason I use those is because they have an optical slave in them. So they were so cheap. I just saw them online used and I bought two of them and I just throw them in my case. And if I need, you know, extra flash for a back room or a bathroom just to give a little light, I throw some batteries in there, just put it on the floor or just point it somewhere with a little stand. And with the optical slave, it'll fire with my Canon. So it's not an issue.
And a little trick that will help you make more power with your flashes is I always use the settings of F7.1 with a crop camera or F8 with a full frame camera, and that will give me really good depth of field. But if you shoot more if you shoot more depth of field like F8, F10, 11, 16 whatever, it's going to make your flashes effectively less powerful. And the other thing you can do is, and I learned this from Scott Hargis, I started shooting ISO 400. And with your camera, if you increase your ISO to 400, and you could go way up higher than that, but it will effectively give your flashes more power. So you're going to get a little more bang for your buck than if you used ISO 100. And you're never going to notice the noise, in my opinion, with real estate photography. What are you settings?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I was shooting for years up until probably literally a month and a half ago, 2 months ago at, 100 or 160, 160 for some reason, just for my film days. But I was shooting at 100 all the time. And then I went and I bought the round head top for the AD200. And I've noticed with that top, you lose a little bit of light. And at 100, and I shoot also at F8, it wasn't cutting it. So I started shooting at 400, and it gives me that extra little stop of light that I needed that I wasn't getting when I switched the head. I was switching off between, I guess, the regular Fresnel head with a reflector and that speed light head that comes with the 8200. And then I bought that new round head that came out, what was it, a month ago or 2 months ago, something like that. And I like the head much better. It's a much, more appeasing light source, if you want to call it that. But I was losing a little of the power of the light, so I started shooting at 400, and it kind of counterbalanced a little bit of light I was losing, and it works great now.
Yeah, well, I recommend everybody, especially people learning, I recommend going in a room, in your bedroom, your house, you have a room that's like a 8x10 or 10x12 room with a ceiling fan and a window, and just practice with your flashes. Put them high, put them low, point them back, point them forward, change your ISO, change your shutter speed, change your aperture, your ISO, and just see the effects, so you can really see what it does, changing these settings. And it's very interesting, and it really has a huge effect on everything you're doing. So recommend playing with that. And
sure, yeah, definitely find that right combination between shutter speed and ISO, because as you start lowering your shutter speed, you're going to start allowing obviously more ambient light into the room in your shots. So you have to just kind of play and find that balance on what works for you.
Yeah. So I think that, and I was kind of alluding to this earlier in a little blurb I was going to say, but I started, and once I went from HDR and then I started using Young Nuo lights, oh my gosh, I took pictures of my trunk, going, hey guys, look what I'm going to do, a big shoot. And I've had like 8 speed lights and 8 stands, and it was just insane. And then I really got started doing the Godox or Flashpoint, and I really pared it down, and I started getting bigger lights. And the other thing too is, if you can spend the money on the lithium ion battery on the speed lights, that is also all the other lights have lithium ion. You will never go back to AA batteries again, because my speed light with a lithium ion full charge will last me a full week, maybe more. And I it's huge deal.
Yeah, that's, it's funny you say that, because that's actually the mistake I made. I bought the speed light with the AA batteries, and I said to myself, I'm not going to use my speed light so often. And I don't use my speed light so often. I use it literally maybe 8 to 10 times a year. But every time I use it, I'm like, oh, I should have got the lithium ion battery.
But I now, in my scenario, because I'm talking real estate photography myself right here, I will use all my lights downstairs and everything. But when I go upstairs, I'm just going to take a 200 on a stand and a speed light in my pouch on my tripod. I'll put the 200 in the master bedroom 9 out of 10 times, and I'll go back and I'll start at the child's bedroom down the hallway, and then go from that to the bathroom, to the other hall, bath, to the other kids' room, and then I'll do the study, and then I'll do this and do that. And I'll be honest with you, I do everything with a speed light. It cuts so much time out of my day, and I just pull it out of my pouch, I lift it up, I bounce off the ceiling, put it back in, I walk on to the next shot. So I use the speed light all the time, and I know.
Ask you, what head do you use on your 200?
Okay, I got everything, man. Okay,
because it comes with two heads.
It comes with a Fresnel, and it comes with a bare bulb, which could put a reflector on it. But here's the deal. The main thing about the 200, and that I've come to really value, is its compact size, because the 360 has an external battery and it's bigger. It's more powerful. It's a better quality of light, everything like that. But the 200 is compact, and I use the Fresnel head because if I put the round head, the newer round head on there, it is slightly longer and slightly bigger and doesn't fit as well into my Pelican 1510 case. So that little bit of extra size, I didn't see a big difference in it, in the lighting. You know, some people say it's got more power. Some people say this and say that, and I'm sure it's a better.
Well, as I just mentioned, I've noticed it has a little less power.
I don't know. So, but I will just use the Fresnel head, and it is fine with me. I don't mind the light leak. I don't really ever notice it, and it just works fine for me. So I've morphed. Mm-hmm. I didn't really like the 200 when it first came out, but now I do, and I just use the Fresnel head that comes with it. I could do the bare bulb too. Oh, I have a little 12 by 12 softbox that I can work with. I put my bare bulb, the 8200 bare bulb, into it, and I can use that for weddings and portraits. Works awesome. But for real estate photography, I just use it and bounce it straight off the ceiling, and that's it.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I have two 8200s, and I have one on one. So I have one with the Fresnel head on there, and then I have one with the round head, the new round head, which I like also. So. Yeah. All right, cool. And then, you know, obviously we spoke about, you know, going from beginner to more intermediate and advanced. And I think, you know, once you hone on your equipment and your technique is down pat and you're ready to start making your life easier, you know, tilt shift lenses are a no-brainer. But by no means are they necessary for beginners. Like I said, I started what I was doing, you know, with a 1635, and that got me through the first 2 years of my career before I bought my first tilt shift lens.
And you can do a fake tilt shift. I actually do that a lot when I don't have my tilt shift on. I just raise my camera up. I tilt the camera down in the front, and then I just fix the verticals in post and crop the sides out. And you can do that too. But I agree. I think tilt shift is just something like my D4. It's just made my life so much better, and it's been wonderful. And I absolutely don't think anybody needs a tilt shift. Absolutely. I know one of the top photographers in the world, design photographers in the world, and he was telling us that he doesn't use a tilt shift almost ever. He uses a 24 to 70. Now, he's doing design photography, but really interesting. When you look at his work, you'll realize it. And I am guilty of abusing my tilt shift, but I do love the tilt shift. So, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's like you said, it's funny because I do have a 1635 and a 24 to 70 always in my case, along with my two tilt shifts. And I always go right to the tilt shift. And even when I'm doing details, I usually throw my 2X extender onto my 24 tilt shift to give me, you know, I guess a 48 ultimately, but I never really put my 24 to 70 on, and I really should, because, you know, throwing a 70 millimeter on that lens can do some really nice detail.
I'll tell you, I've been doing, last week I did a couple of design shoots and I did some detail shots, and I was using my Sony 85 1.8. And I'll tell you something, with that focal length, because everybody's got to understand, the longer the focal length, the more compression you have. And that subject isolation gives you that really cool out of focus area, you know, your subject isolation. And that 85 1.8, man, I'll tell you something, I couldn't get that out of a 24, out of my Sony 2470 G Master 2.8, and it's just because of the physical properties of that lens. So I recommend, you know, if you can get a cheap, and it's an inexpensive lens, or get a 50 1.8, which is a nifty 50, and you can usually get it for $200-$300 new. That's a great lens for detail. And as we're talking about little extra things, I want to just say two things before. I know we're going a little long on this, but everybody loves gear. One thing, though, is another thing you should think about getting, in my opinion, is a painter's pole. And on my kit.com, you can see it. It's a Shearlock 8 to 16 foot extension pole. And I use that with being tethered with my A6000. And I get elevated shots that just set my shots apart from the competition. And it's the big, best $48 bang for the buck I've ever got. And if you look at my my twilight shots, you'll very often see I shoot twilights with a handheld pole. And a lot of people are going to go, well, just go get a drone and get this and that. Well, You don't have the money. You know, you're starting out. Get yourself a pole and get the Sherlock pole. But, and I don't get any money for them Sherlock company, but go get yourself a pole. It is just the best bang for your buck. And the last thing I'm going to say before I shut him and let you go, Brian, I'm going to tell everybody, please remember education. Don't forget, education is absolutely critical in your progression. So there are workshops out there. I got another workshop coming up in May, but whoever's workshop, there are actually quite a few people doing workshops now. And you find yourself either a workshop, go get yourself either the Scott Hargis, the Mike Kelly videos. You can learn from that. Go get yourself the Nathan Cool has books out there. I've got my YouTube channel. Well, you're listening to Shooting Spaces, so you're doing something. But go get yourself as much education and experience as you can, because that is where you should be spending your time and your money. Right, Brian?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm not going to hone too much about on that, because as you just said, most of the people listening know the value of listening, learning, watching, and going forward from there. So yeah, I mean, there's no end to the amount of stuff you can learn. And you know, new tutorials come out and I buy them right away. You know, for me to spend the money, even if I get one thing out of it that makes my work 1% better, it's worth it, because ultimately the better you get, you know, the more clients you're going to get, the more money you're going to make, and the better photographer you're going to become. And yeah, I mean, as far as what else you just mentioned, the pole, look, I have a drone, so I'm not going to get into the drone versus pole debate.
Please don't.
But that being said, some of my best drone shots are from 15, 20 feet up. So like you said, if you're, you know, not going to go spend the money on a drone and spend the money on a license and all that, you know, fun jazz, definitely get a pole, because that, you know, that 15 feet up that you can get, that perspective, whether you're on a pole or a drone, those are some of the best shots.
And it will set your shots apart from your competition. So that's it. And then you'll make more money and then you can buy more equipment. There you go.
And you can get that Maserati that Rich wants.
I don't want a Maserati. No, I just got an Outback, man. I love it. I'm stuck. I'm stuck. So I just think that was a great question. Was there anything else we're missing, Brian?
No, I think we covered most of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I guess you can go on for hours on gear, but we don't want to hold everyone up. I mean, we know most people are probably pulling up to their shoots right now as we finish up. So
yeah, okay. And it's not so much what you got; it's what you do with it. But really, I think that the bottom line is you will start learning what works for you, and your progression in gear will change. It will go one way and then another way and then maybe come backwards. My gear is a lot simpler than it used to be in some ways, but whatever you do, you know, just try and spend as much money as you can on the fundamentals of the gear, like the geared head, tethering, a better tripod, things like that, and some lights. But you know what? I'm sure you'll do fine, and I commend you for seeking out the answers to your questions.
Mm-hmm. All right, Rich, that was a good one. Like you said, we went a little longer than we expected to when we started this, but I guess once two guys start talking gear, two photographers, you
it's just so much fun. I love it. I hate it. I love it. I hate it. But it is fun, and it's part of the business that I love, but that's just me. So.
It is. You know, we speak to each other every so often off the air, and we're just, you know, shooting the crap talking gear. So it happens, you know.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right. But we want to urge everyone to submit your Ask the Guys. We have a couple more in the queue, but, you know, we can always use more questions. It helps us come up with great content to offer all of you. So submit your questions, anything from business to gear to software to technique to, I don't know, whatever else I'm missing. Just get those questions in there. Even if you want to learn a little bit more about design and architectural work and you want to go that way, ask questions. And, you know, if it's something that's beyond us, as we've said, we can try and get somebody on that can help us. So ask a question that might be beyond Rich and I, and we'll do our best to get some answers.
Yeah. And I also forgot to say, and we have our please subscribe to the podcast, and we love that, but please check out the shootingspaces.net, our blog, and another resource for you is you can find coaching on there. I coach, and we have Sam Chen coaching, and coaching is a really good way to learn what you can't just learn on your own. You know, you can learn anything with the right amount of time, but sometimes we want to get in the fast track. So coaching is really helpful, and just, you know, whatever you do, just do the best you can, and spend as much time as you feel good about doing it to get the best product you can. Be reliable, keep up on it, and just whatever you do, go out and shoot some spaces.
This episode of Shooting Spaces has been brought to you by HDPhotoHub.com, helping your real estate photography business grow and stay on the cutting edge. Just upload your photos and your clients get a property website, social media flyers, and videos all automatically. Register today at hdphotohub.com using referral code SHOOTINGSPACES to get your first property marketing kit absolutely free. HD Photo Hub is where great photos become a powerful marketing kit. Again, that's hdphotohub.com.
This has been Shooting Spaces, a real estate photography podcast. Subscribe to the show and don't forget to leave us a review. You can also follow Rich and Brian on social media and at their website, shootingspacespodcast.com.